RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So the latest piece in the New Zealand Centre for Political Research, posted by Muriel Newman, Dr. Muriel Newman, on the 28th of August, just gone. The Radicalisation of Local Government, that's the title. And this follows last week when the Prime Minister, or last week at the time that this was posted on the 28th, when the Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon, delivered a broadside across the bow of local authorities at the Local Government New Zealand Conference in Wellington. Dr. Muriel Newman is with us now. Muriel, thanks for coming back on RCR.
It's a pleasure, Paul.
Yeah, he got quite a reaction to what he said at that conference at the $180 million convention centre, which some are already calling a white elephant, and probably a good example of what he was saying, possibly. So what did you make of the reaction the Prime Minister got to that speech, that presentation at LGNZ conference?
I thought it was a very interesting reaction because local government itself knows that it is living beyond its means. You know, if you have a look at the average rate increase for people around the country, it's 15%, which is miles more than the rate of inflation. And in some council areas, you know, they're asking for rate increases of over 20%. I mean, this is putting enormous pressure on families throughout the country. And so local government knows it's facing a huge problem. It's got spiralling debts. And yet when the government comes along and says, look, we know part of the problem is your commitment to the four well-beings, which, of course, Helen Clark's government brought in 2002, instead of saying, well, fair enough, you know, let's restrict what we have to be involved in so we can live within our means, a lot of them got very angry. So it was rather a strange reaction, I thought.
Yeah, getting angry over that, it's almost like they've been enjoying this path. They've been enjoying it and they want it to continue, even though they know, and they've known for a while, haven't they, that costs are and debt are, well, do we say out of control, and that people are struggling on affordability. Yet, you know, they've kind of pressed on.
Yeah, it's been quite distressing, really, you know, for businesses and sort of property owners. When you see, you know, that it's just this terrible, terrible increase, isn't it? Every year it goes up and up and up. And, you know, there are cases that I'm aware of where, you know, small businesses can't handle it anymore and they have to close down, where people with properties that, you know, used to be affordable that are now too expensive are being forced to sell up and move to something else. It's just wrong. And, you know, meanwhile, a lot of these councils are busy, you know, building new office buildings and doing things that you think, God, if they had to live within their means, there's no way they'd do those things right now. If your communities are very wealthy and money is flowing and, you know, New Zealand's been through those periods before, then for local government to sort of, you know, do some expansionary things, that's probably not too bad, really. You know, it sort of makes sense. But at a time like this where everything is very tight and it has been now for a number of years, it's just not right. So I think the government was well within their means to start to restrict local government. The Prime Minister made announced four changes that they're going to bring in. But in my mind, there's a whole lot more they should be doing if they really want to help to get local government back under control.
Well, let's get to some of those before we're done with this chat. But from what I can see and what you say in this piece, this goes back to 2002 and the Labor government and the four, as you've just mentioned, well-being provisions, economic, social, cultural and environmental. On the surface, you kind of couldn't argue with those four provisions, could you? But the way it's turned out, right?
Yeah. I think that is the trouble, that what it did when you look back was it opened the door for a lot of people with agendas to really get involved in local government. Because at the same time, of course, what Helen Clark did was she introduced the powers of general competence for local councils. And until that time, everything was very prescriptive. So councils were allowed to get involved in, you know, a whole number of things, roading, parks and some forestry, funnily enough. There was a whole load of stuff that they were entitled to be involved in, and they were given specific funding for those projects. And then if councils wanted to do anything else on top of that, they either had to plead the case or, you know, have a special funding arrangement with their community. So it was more difficult for them to stray, if you know what I mean. But when Helen Clark introduced those well-beings, which essentially told councils they could do anything they liked, I remember at the time some of them decided that they'd like to improve literacy in their community. You know, others wanted to cure poverty. I mean, there were just masses and masses of variety of ideas that were flowing around. And on top of that, they gave them the power to fund any of them. Obviously within their budgeted, amount of money that they collect. So it wasn't a carte blanche to just go and spend wildly, but it was a carte blanche to put the money into projects that they wanted. And so what happened then was that people with agendas then saw local government as a way to help to get their ideas, you know, into reality. And so local government then became the place that people went to if they had expansionary plans with, I don't know, the environment, culture, you name it. They got themselves elected onto councils and could sway the council and get stuff done. And in itself, you know, that probably wasn't a bad idea. But the thing was, it spiralled out of control. And at some stage, there should have been restraints put in, especially funding restraints. I mean, over the years, there have been people who've suggested that local government rates should really be linked to the rate of inflation. So, you know, you can't increase the rates by more than the rate of inflation. Now, if that had have been introduced as a funding restraint right at the beginning, we probably wouldn't be in the situation we are in today, where council debt, as I said, is spiralling out of control. Councils aren't really bringing it to the attention of the public because, you know, it's one of those things you don't want to talk too much about. But at some stage, this is a debt that future generations are going to have to handle unless local government starts to rein it back. And that's what I think they should do. So all of these changes need to be introduced along with curtailing the well-beings. Otherwise, you're still not going to get on top of the problem.
Yeah, well, you could argue also that well-beings is, you know, water pipes that don't leak, sewer systems that work, rubbish collection that takes place reliably, etc. I'm just wondering, these changes that were made back in 2002, and let's call them unintended consequences, do you think they were unintended, or was there a certain intention in those changes? Have you given much thought to that?
Yeah, I think there was an intention. It was local government was seen as another layer, isn't it, of you know, the way a country is governed and managed. And so you've got central government, and of course the government of the day, you know, tries to get that all tied up according to, you know, their own direction and agenda. And so what they were doing was bringing local government into line to give another layer of control, if you like, according to, you know, the government of the day. So you could say, if you look back, you know, pretty much Labor governments tend to be on the socialist side of the equation, and so that was a way of releasing local government from the constraints that had always been there to allow them to pick up on those issues as well. And of course, the other change that they made at the time, which we haven't mentioned, was to introduce new ways of involving Maori in decision making in local councils. And that had been sort of introduced, if you like, through the Resource Management Act. If you remember, Geoffrey Palmer had worked on the RMA reforms at the tail end of the Longy Palmer Labor government, but he didn't have time to bring his RMA legislation into Parliament before that 1990 election. And so the National government under Simon Upton, they actually passed it into law. But in that act, Geoffrey Palmer had made strong commitments for Maori to be involved in decision-making over resource consents. And of course, over the years, with the cultural well-being on top of that, it all spiralled pretty much, I was going to say out of control, but presumably along the lines of what the local councils wanted. And so now in many parts of the country, you know, local iwi have got the sort of controlling say on whether someone can get a resource consent to build a garage or, you know, put up a new fence or something. I mean, it's pretty crazy, really. And on top of that, there was the provision there for advisory groups to be appointed. And so now we've got a situation in many parts of the country where essentially the tribal groups in an area have got the local council pretty much tied up. And that's not right either. This is a situation where the local council is no longer acting in the best interests of the community and what the community needs. It's often acting in the best interests of the local tribal group. And so, you know, I think things have got completely out of control in some parts of local government, and a shake-up is definitely needed.
Yeah, people have been saying for ages, though, Muriel, that, you know, stick to the knitting, the things I mentioned before and the things that you mentioned in this piece, you know, what we, up to this point anyway, had come to know that local government were responsible for. So the people have been way ahead of everyone else all the way through, it seems to me.
Yeah, it's a shame, really, because when you think about it, you know, what do you want local government to do? Do you want it to be all things to all people? And I think most people would say no. It's a pretty big responsibility to make sure that our water systems are running right, you know, sewerage, stormwater, fresh water, roading, the consent processes, our parks, our, you know, libraries and museums. Like, there's a whole host of really important things for a community that we all want to be run really well. And if there was spare money, you'd like them to be upgrading some of those facilities, especially as communities expand. And so, you know, if they did stick to their knitting, I think we'd probably all sigh, you know, well, we'd all be relieved, because that would actually stop all the spiralling out of control of the costs that they're forcing onto local communities. You know, in our sort of local area, you've got councils are proposing to bid for, you know, Warriors games and, you know, they've got a whole lot of events that they've got planned, and you just know looking at them that, you know, they're going to spend way more than they're going to get back in terms of benefits for the community. And you think to yourself, well, why on earth are they involved in those things? And it's because they can. So, yes, I think that if they stuck to their knitting and did it really, really well, I think that people would be very pleased. And probably in terms of, you know, where we think of local government, they'd probably go up a few notches as well.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of, you know, expenditure on the likes of pedestrian crossings that are all colourful. You know, and I guess going beyond that, what you get is actually more division, because these items that or areas that local government are involved in now actually cause division. don't they? Really? That's what it ends up as, it seems to me, anyway.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. It's what they do through these agendas that people have who get themselves elected onto councils. You know, they are pushing political issues all the time. It's like, same with a lot of the Maori things. I mean, that is a hugely political issue. And so now it's being forced onto communities. As you say, the Rainbow Crossings, that was another classic one. They should not be involved in politics at that level, you know, national politics at that level, I believe. I think that they should just be doing the basics really well. They should be all things to all people in the community in terms of being not ideologically driven. Obviously, you're going to get people on there who are members of political parties and activist groups and all the rest of it. But to be honest, if they went back to sticking to the knitting and just having to do the basics well, a lot of those people who see local government at right now as an opportunity to force through, you know, these ideas, they probably would no longer be interested. And to be honest, the community would probably be better off.
They'd go away.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think
this one's not for me.
Yeah, well, when you look at it, you know, local government has been hijacked. That's the reality, by people with agendas. And so the government now has made the first move to try to bring them back to what they should be. And I just hope that they don't stop there. I hope they realise that there's a lot more to do to make sure that their ideas are going to be properly or have proper outcomes, if you know what I mean. Because the worst thing is when governments start to do reforms and they only half do them. And then what happens is everybody who's affected gets grumpy, right? The people who want the reforms to go through then also get grumpy because it doesn't work properly. And so I think that what they've done is a good step, but they've got to see it as the first step, and they have to carry through with a whole lot more things that are going to make sure that they do bring them back under control. Keep our rates down, start to pay off the debt, you know, stop the influence of these groups, these political groups, and try including the tribal groups in local government. I think that they should find a way to remove all of that influence, so that, again, the people who get elected to council can do what they pledge to in their oath, which is to serve the whole community to the best of their ability and not pick favourites anymore.
Isn't there an angle to this that actually you could think of as quite sinister? If you're pricing people out of rates, that's an attack on their private property. They really, in the end, don't own what they think they own, because if they can't pay those rates, well, the ultimate is a forfeit of the property. So if you're driving people into unaffordability because of profligate spending, excessive debt, and not sticking to the mission, that's an attack on a fundamental freedom, isn't it, in the end?
It is. It is. And it's when you look at it in that light, it is very sinister. And funnily enough, I'm just looking at, the next article that I'm writing, and it's I decided to go back and have a look at Hipupu. As we know, Hipupu was the blueprint for tribal rule by 1840 that had been put out by the Labor government, hidden from, if you remember, from New Zealand First during that first term of government, and then once they won the right to govern alone, it was enacted furiously through Te Arawhiti, the Office of Maori Crown Relations. That was in cahoots with iwi leaders, and that was driving the changes through the public service. And so they made a huge lot of progress, but one area where they didn't make too much progress was local government, mostly because I think they were focused on central government. And, now when you look at it, what's in that plan, the Hipupu plan, is to co-govern local government by 2040. And we were just thinking, you know, that this business of having Maori wards on some councils, that is actually enough to sway the council to be voting in favour of what the tribal groups want. And one of the things they want to get their hands on is control of rates. And if they have control of rates, if you're probably aware that there's a lot of Maori landowners that don't pay rates at all, and the council's just write off the debt. In Hipuapua, they want Maori freehold land to be exempt from rates as well. Obviously, other land wouldn't be exempt from rates, and so if a group like that controls a council, there is nothing to stop them pushing up rates past a point where, you know, landowners will be forced to move off their land. I mean, it is very sinister, all of this stuff. And, you know, if it was just, you know, people speculating about it, that's one thing. But when it's actually written in black and white in a document that right now the Green Party, part of Labour and the Maori Party all subscribe to. So if at the next election there's a switch and they get the levers of power, all of this can come back and haunt us. And it really is a very, very scary thought that a vested interest group would get control of councils, control of rates, control of water, all of these things. So, you know, I think the important job that this government has to do is to dismantle all of that framework that was built up that could be sort of, you know, empowered again, really, with just a change in government. It's too scary for New Zealanders. Unfortunately, most people have no idea what's been going on, and so they're completely oblivious to the threats that are out there. But as I say, they're in black and white, they were enacted, and now this government is trying hard to get rid of some of these things and safeguard, I think, the future of New Zealand.
Well, do they have to be incredibly prescriptive then and really just be very clear about what local government is limited to, so there's no wiggle room anymore? Like, really,
well,
nail
actually,
it down once and for all.
Yeah, funnily enough, that's sort of the conclusion that I've been coming to, that, you know, there was a lot of sort of angst, if you like, about the way local government used to be. And when the new reforms came in, certainly when the RMA, Resource Management Act, came in and it was going to be enabling legislation, you know, everybody got quite excited by that because, of course, if you have something that is very prescriptive, it does limit things, doesn't it? You know, and so it was the same with local government. I think there was a certain element that said, well, thank goodness for this. You know, we are now going to be free to do some of the stuff that we really should have been doing ages ago. And so, you know, in saying that, yes, they should go back to being prescriptive, it's got to be an enlightened prescriptive, if you know what I mean, so that you don't actually stop good things happening, but you do stop councils being used for other agendas. I don't know how you do that. I've been trying to figure out if there's a way that you can, you know, try and stop that. And I guess, you know, funnily enough, when Michael Laws was the mayor of, it was Whanganui, wasn't it? Started out by every year he would put out a list of council priorities. You know, these are the projects that the council was interested in doing. And they put it out for everybody through a referendum process to be able to help them determine which of these projects, you know, got the priority. And I remember thinking at the time that was pretty enlightened, that way of doing it. So if you had a council that, you know, it had to do the rubbish, it had to do the sewerage and the water and all these things that we know, you know, we would prescribe local government to do. And then on top of that, if they had money left over for discretionary spending, if they then put it out to the community like that in terms of these are the projects, these are the costs, which ones do you think we should do, that might actually be a way around it. Just a thought.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, and it certainly worked for Michael Laws at the time. I remember him saying that it was, you know, very popular and people were, you know, enthusiastic about the process. So maybe that's the answer, that you have a prescriptive a legislation that is more prescriptive, but at the same time discretion is allowed if the funding allows it, and then as to what the projects are, it's put out to a referendum of everyone. And that way you can help to prevent capture by, you know, activist groups that try and get all their mates together to support something, you know, and push it through, when actually it's not in the best interest of the community at all.
I hope someone's listening to this, Muriel, who can do that. I hope they're listening.
Right. Well, yeah. Paul, there you go. Thank you for the idea.
Sounds like it's already been done, but in what you've just said there, talking about what Michael did, then you can say, well, you wanted it, and if it doesn't turn out, there's no one, well, to blame. You know, there's a process by which people will then see that, okay, well, that's what we wanted, didn't turn out, but they won't have the sense of being kind of fleeced, you know?
That's right, yeah, I think. And it would help to build, you know, sort of more, I think, connection with what local government is all about and what it's doing. There's just one little thing I did want to mention. You know, there's a lot of angst at the moment over Maori wards, and, you know, councils are either voting to have a referendum, or I think there's just been a couple of councils only that have voted to not have the Maori wards after the next election. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how, you know, the Maori wards are needed to get Maori more involved in local government. And it occurred to me when I was thinking about this rates issue that, you know, if most Maori don't pay rates because they are involved in communal land or they're renting, then that's probably the reason why there is not so much interest in local government. Because I bet if somebody did an analysis of who it is who actually votes in local elections, I bet you anything, ratepayers would be way on top of the list because, as you say, they have skin in the game. Renters who also are involved because, you know, they have to pay more in rent if the rates go up. But it's distant, isn't it? You know, it's not the same. And so I bet you that their involvement is less. And then for Maori, if they're, you know, own Maori land and the groups in charge just default on paying rates, so they, you know, they don't like rates anyway and say, we're not going to pay them, then that's going to be an even worse or greater disincentive not to be involved, if you know what I mean. And so, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why we've got this situation. One solution there would be to ensure Maori do pay rates, pay their way. So because they use the roads, they use the water services and all these things, I think they've been, it's been a soft touch until now. And I think maybe the time is that and in fact, to be honest, I reckon central government should pay rates as well. So that in some small council areas, you know, where they only have a small population base, they've got huge amounts of conservation land. And of course, nobody pays rates on that. Well, I think they should. I think central government should pay its dues as well. Schools, universities, you know, everybody should have to pay. And then that way, local government would probably have more money to do the basics better.
Well, one thing I know, because we've spoken to quite a few local politicians around the country on this program now in the last year and a half, many of them say, when I ask them, is the rating system broken? And they say yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think an overhaul is needed. And as I say, I think that the time has come where some of these groups that have been exempt traditionally shouldn't be exempt anymore.
Yeah.
And then that way the burden on, you know, the elderly and some of these people who are really struggling now, that would be much less. And on, you know, first home buyers and,
yeah,
and all
everyone.
These people, it would just allow property values to come down a bit and be more affordable and reachable for other people. So, yes, I think that would make sense. Another thing that I was very angry about, really, when I read about it, was, you know, this whole RMA thing and, you know, the fact that if you want to build something, you have to get consent from local iwi, who might say yes or no, who knows, or might charge you something for a cultural impact report. I was very angry to read that Ngāi Tahu had received upward or over, I understand, $100 million from Genesis Energy and Meridian. So they're the two power companies that have got generators or power stations and dams on the Waitaki River. Now, that's in Ngāi Tahu territory, and so they had to go cap in hand to iwi to ask for permission to extend their water rights. And I understand that they ended up having to pay the iwi $100 million.
To make the problem
now,
go away.
You know, you've got to say... Yeah, and you've got to say that is so exorbitant.
Well, it's a mafia shakedown.
Well, there should be a government inquiry into why was Ngāi Tahu able to charge the power generators that provide power to all New Zealanders through a river that is owned by nobody, if you know what I mean. It's, you know, water is owned by nobody. And, you know, why should they be able to extract $100 million?
Well, they didn't have to pay it, Muriel.
This is not right.
I mean, I would have said, no, you're not getting anything. Sorry. What are they going to do? Dam the river?
Well, again, that needs to be looked into. That needs to be looked into.
Yeah, why
did they pay? You know what I mean? So it's both sides, really. It just needs, I think, a government inquiry to look into it. I'm not somebody who believes inquiries should be launched left, right and centre, but in that case, there's just something badly wrong, because is it blackmail? You know, obviously the power generators have wanted another 30-year or 20-year consent, right? What's it going to be next time? $1 billion? You know, it's just ridiculous.
Well, no wonder power's so expensive.
Well, that's right,
You add 100 mil to the bottom line.
It's just wrong. So anyway, the good thing is that the RMA is going to be replaced. So hopefully we won't have that problem in the future. But that doesn't mean someone shouldn't look into it now and see what on earth went on.
I don't know. I don't know anything about these processes, Muriel. But are people that weak that they just fold and cave at the first...
Look, I think I think it's all to do with the strategy of tribal groups throughout New Zealand. If you go against them, you're called a racist, and then you get a label as being a racist. And if you're in an organisation and you're starting to get a name as being a racist organisation, then that's a problem for you. And it's just intimidation, it's bullying, it's threats, it's just wrong. And what the government has done is they have put power into the hands of these big tribal corporations. Remember, these are $1 billion-plus businesses. And so they've put all this power in their hands over private sector decision-making. And that shouldn't be. You know, I think it's just a wrong process. Sure, you've got to go and ask and all the rest of it if you want to put up a fence
well,
on your property.
Okay.
Yeah. That's right. So there should be some right of consultation.
But to be shaken down...
Well, that's it. It's crossed the line, hasn't it? And it's not just with that, it's with in all sorts, you know, right throughout New Zealand, there are people who are being victimised, if you like, you know, pay up or you don't get whatever, and that's just wrong. And but as I said, the RMA is being reformed, and I hope that to hell, really, that they don't include anything similar in the replacement.
Muriel, always good to hear what you have to say. The piece on the New Zealand Centre for Political Research that started our chat, the radicalisation of local government. Always enjoy hearing what you have to say. Muriel, thanks for coming on again.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.